Alright, then we'll say good morning. Today's daf is Lamed Ches 38. We are picking up on Lamed Zayin Lamed Beis 37B, last two lines, Amri Naradoi. Our shir this morning is sponsored by Manny and Esther Rechthand and family in commemoration of the yard site of Esther's father, Jack Hammermesh, Yaakov Yerachmiel ben Moshe Tzvi. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Shem will have an aliyah and the family on the Chama. So let's begin. Amri Naradoi. A lot of exciting Gemara today. So the Naradoi said the following. Hai man dizobin dikla lechavrei. If there was an individual who went ahead and sold a palm tree to his friend, so kani lei mishipuli adoma. So also remember again, yesterday we began the interesting discussion of when you go ahead and you purchase a tree, so what level of land do you acquire with that tree? So remember again, in yesterday's context, we were always speaking about a group of trees. Here we're speaking about a solitary tree. So if you look at the Rashbam for just a moment, the Rashbam says, Mishipula atoma. So, Luau, let me translate. The Naradoim say that when you go ahead and you sell a palm tree to another individual, you acquire literally the ground. Mishipuli means from the base of the tree, atahoma, until the depths of the tree. So if you can imagine, you acquire the dirt around the base of the tree, extending downwards. Now, of course, the novelty in this, look at the Rashbam, is Mishipula atahoma, shulov mitargaminon shipoli, kolomar, kolakarka bishule ha'ilon, So we'll say, so the Rashbam says, even though, again, on a technical level, this is a solitary tree, like this is not part of a greater field. So the halacha is, the Naradoim are saying that whenever you go ahead and you buy a single solitary tree, although you are not entitled to surrounding land, you are absolutely entitled to the earth underneath the tree. Which means, now we'll say, what's the ramifications of owning the earth underneath the tree? That should that tree die, you, the owner of the tree, have the right and the ability to go ahead and plant a new one. So top of Lamed Ches, Maskif La Rava. So Rava says, but I don't understand, why is this true? Meaning, why are we assuming Naradoim that the owner of the tree owns the land underneath the tree? B'lei malei, korkama derishka zibinilach, akar korkama derishka vizil. Well, and I literally translated it. So Rava says, why can't the owner of the field say to the owner of the tree, Karkuma derishka. What's that? Karkuma derishka is garden saffron. So a type of saffron called garden saffron. So I've sold you garden saffron. I'll go ahead and uproot your garden saffron and get out of here. What does this mean? So take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Maskev la Rava, amai kana karka de keneged ha'ilon, me'achar disnan lo kana karka klal. So now this is 1 second. Why are you presupposing that the owner of the tree automatically acquires the karka underneath the tree? Why can't this be like the case of garden saffron? Well, say, what's the case of garden saffron? Take a look at the Rashbam. Korkama derishka zeminilach, krug, okay, see, kotso, urigilim lemachra bekarko, umanicho achi igmar perio, vaokro, afa ilan shamacharti lucha, leperosav, hakarko lo macharti lucha, ela lahaniach ilan chabekarko sheli, kol yemesha tsarich lekarko, achi yavash tahino dumid de karkum. Why can't the owner of the field say to the owner, listen, I gave you the ability to use my field to go ahead and nurture and nourish your tree. So I gave you the right to go ahead and plant your tree, harvest the fruit from your tree, but that's it. Meaning once your tree dies, then what? You're done. In other words, take your stuff and get out of here. You have absolutely no rights in the karka itself. So we'll say, what Rav is saying is, Naradoim, you're taking it for granted that when someone plants something, and when somebody buys something that is attached or that is planted in the ground, that person automatically gets some level of ground rights. To which Rav says, why? Why can't it be that when someone plants something in the ground, they own the object that is planted, and they own the right to keep that object in the ground so long as the object is alive? But once the object dies, the tree dies, the plant dies, whatever it is, we're done. There's no ability. So we'll say it's the same way. The garden saffron case, by the way, is like this. First, I buy garden saffron from Reuven. So what rights do I have? I have the right to come in there and harvest the garden saffron. What don't I have the right to do?
Replant.
That I don't have that right. Why? Because Lamaisa, again, is excellent. Because Lamaisa, again, I don't go ahead and own any ground rights. I just own plant rights. So Rebbe says same thing with the tree. Say the person owns the tree, doesn't own any ground, doesn't own any earth. To which the Gemara says, Ella Amra Rava, therefore Rava says the following. What's the case? Beba machmas taino. Oh. So we'll say, Rava says, what's the case over here? The case over here is where the owner of the tree claims that the owner of the karka sold him ground rights as well. Take a look at the Rashbam again. Ella Amar Rava, Hacho Hudekani the karka, Shetacha Sa'ilon. What's the case over here where we say the owner of the tree also acquires the earth underneath the tree? What's that case? He says, Beba b'machmas hatayna, shetoin lemocher beferush macharti li'ilan v'akarko shetachtov, li'ita achar b'mkomo, u'bishtar v'achalti shnei chazakav, l'nitzharti bishtar yosim m'shaloshonim, t'hash l'dami l'karko medushka. So we'll say, oh, so says, what's the case over here? The case over here is where the owner of the tree is claiming to the owner of land, you sold me land rights. Ah, you're asking me, where's my shtar? I don't have my shtar anymore. You know why? Because I've been here more than 3 years. And once a person is more than 3 years, they have shnei years of chazaka, they're no longer nisar in their shtar. That's why ultimately, again, I have the rights to the earth. To which the Gemara says, Omnei Marka, Shei Shabed Rav Chista L'Rav Ashi, V'kurkama Derishka Zabin Lei, My Havilei Lemei Avid. Oh, so we'll say, so now the Gemara says, fine. So now I understand the case of the Naradoim. So we'll say, the case of the Naradoim is, I buy a tree from Reuven, I've been using that tree for 3 years. Reuven, my tree dies, I want to plant a new one. Reuven says, get out of here. Get out of here, you're done. I say, what are you talking about? I went ahead and I bought the land rights. Land rights, so therefore I have the right to replant. To which Reuven says, "Nu, where's your shtar?" To which I respond, ultimately, I've been here for more than 3 years. I no longer have my shtar. So the Naradoim saying, Achinami, in that case, the law is on my side, the tree owner's side. I'll own the land underneath the tree and I'll be able to replant the tree. But under normal circumstances, the Gemara says, when somebody buys a solitary tree, or for that matter, when somebody buys rights to a particular crop, what they're buying is the rights to the metaltalin, the movable property, or the ultimate movable property. They're not buying any kind of ground rights. Therefore, should the plant die, should the tree die, they do not have the rights to go ahead and replant this. Now, Rava asks a very interesting question. Excuse me, not Rava. Markashisha, Reid of Chisit Ravashi. So we'll say, here's the following question. So doesn't a problem come up in every case of the saffron? In other words, we'll say, let's take the garden saffron case, because that's the Gemara brought up. You could have a situation where a person has bought, we'll call it, multiple years worth of crops. Let's say I buy from Reuven, you know, the rights to 3 years or to 5 years of garden saffron. So every year I come in, I harvest it. So what's to prevent me from claiming chazaka on the land? Meaning what we just got finished saying is, if I've been there three years, and I've been harvesting the crop, and then I decide to lodge a claim that Reuven actually sold me land rights, that talocho would be on my side because I have the years of chazaka. So if that's the case, why don't we run into this situation every single time Reuven sells Shimon garden saffron rights? Why can't Shimon turn around after 3 years and what? And claim chazaka? Meaning what's to prevent him from essentially exploiting the law and claiming chazaka? To which the Gemara says, "V'korkama derishka zabin lei, my havelei lemei avad." If Reuven sells to Shimon the garden saffron rights, what's to stop Shimon from claiming chazaka on the land? So to which the Gemara says, "Iboylei lemchuye." You're right. Reuven, the owner of the land, Rabbi Yosei, has to what? Has to make sure that sometime during those 3 years, what does he do? He lodges a machor. He lodges an objection, a statement. Right? He makes a statement that says what? That says that at the end of the day, I am the owner of this land and I did not sell the rights to the land to you. So at some point in time, as long as he makes, I know machor we like to translate as objection, but it's a statement, then Enochinami, that will prevent Shimon from creating any kind of level of chazak. We actually had this gemara 2 days ago. Because if you don't say this, Hani mashkanta disur the kasev bahachi bosai, because otherwise if you don't say this, then you're going to run into this problem very often. In what case? In the case of the mashkanta disura. We'll say, what's the mashkanta disura case? The kasev bahachi. Because remember, the mashkanta disura case, we write remember the case of mashkanta disura? What's the case? I lend Reuven $1,000. So we'll say, mashkanta disura, and we had just 2 or 3 days ago, is an interesting mechanism. by which on a technical level one could go ahead and reap the benefits of charging interest without halachically charging interest. What does it mean? I lend Reuven $1,000. Reuven says, fine, you could use my land for 5 years. Then I will say, now, if things go well, it could be that the value of the crop that I'm going to get for over 5 years is going to be way more than $1,000. But it could also be that what? Right, that it's nothing. Less, nothing, it could be nothing. So this is what's called a karov l'schar, karov l'hefz type of situation, without going back to Ezo Neshach, is mutter. So ask the Gemara, don't we run into this problem that we're raising now every single time there's a mashkanta, the surah? Because the boss says, play this out, I lend Reuven $10,000. He says, you could use my land for 5 years. What's to stop me after 3 years by claiming that what? I have chazakah. Meaning, what's to stop me? To which the Gemara says, "Hani mashkan d'sur kasev v'hachi." That mashkan d'sur is written up the following way: "But mishlam shanya ilan, when these years are finished, tepok arad double okesef, you creditor will leave the land without any further repayment on the debt." To which the Gemara says, "So what's to stop the creditor from doing the following?" Ikavish leishtar mashkan. So, remember again, there's a document. There's a document that's drawn up. Now, remember, who's in possession of the document? Who's in possession? The creditor. My creditor is always in the possession of the document because that's his mechanism of collection. So what's to stop the creditor after 3 years from quote-unquote right, losing the document, right? Conveniently losing the document. So there's no longer a shtar. But what do I have? I now have the fact that I, creditor, have been living on that land for 3 years. So I can claim chazak, I can claim ownership, and I am the rightful owner. To which the Gemara says, and let the creditor say, oh, I bought this land. To which the Gemara says, at the end of the day, if the creditor were to lodge such a claim, technically the halacha should say that he's believed. To which the Gemara says, so could it be that Chazal are going to institute something that is going to cause the borrower to lose? Say, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is, Mashkanta Dusura seems to be an easily exploitable situation. Again, I lend Reuven $1,000. The arrangement is I'm going to use this field for 5 years. There's a shtar that outlines all this. At the end of 5 years, I leave the land. Debt is repaid no matter what. What's to stop me 3 years in from conveniently losing the shtar, claiming that I bought it from Reuven, Vaharaya, I've lived here 3 years with Chazaka. What's to stop me from that? And then the more profound question is, why would the Rabbanon create a scenario that is so easily exploitable? To which the Gemara answers, Eli iboile limchuye. So we'll say, rather, what do you have to say? By mashkanta, the sort of the way it works, I will say, is that we require the borrower to what? To lodge a macho. He has to lodge an objection. He has to make sure to go ahead and make his claim of ownership sometime during 3 years. So we'll say all it requires of him is that sometimes during the first three years of repayment, he has to make a statement in front of Edom, and we'll discuss about the mechanics of Macha, and to say what? I am the rightful owner of this land. And as long as that Macha is made sometime during the first 3 years, then the creditor has the inability to establish Chazaka. Hachanami iboile limchuyer. We'll say so too, in any case where you are selling someone the rights to produce over a prolonged period. What I was saying, I understand what the rights to produce might mean. That might mean that someone's coming into my field actively tilling the soil, meaning rights to produce could take on one of two forms. Either I'm planting the produce, but someone else has the rights to harvest it and to use it, or it also means that someone else has the rights to actually plant produce in my field. So the only way to stop a person like that from establishing a chazaka is how? Macho, is to make sure to be able to lodge an objection to their residence in my field. When I say objection to the residence, is I'm not trying to object to what they're doing. I'm just making a statement, a definitive statement of my ownership to prevent them from establishing ownership. Good. So whenever you have sustained use of land by another party other than the owner, the Gemara just suggests that the standard operating procedure for the owner is that sometime during the first 3 years, make sure to make a formal statement, ultimately highlighting your ownership. Good, says the Mishnah. We'll say now we come into another sugya. Now we get to the mechanics of machal. To the mechanics. So again, remember, we're going to translate it as objection because you're going to see the cases over here is where I'm actively objecting to someone living in my land. Although again, beforehand, machal lav dafka means an objection. More appropriately, it means a definitive statement of ownership. But says the Mishnah, shalosh aratos lechazaka. We'll say there are three different lands when it comes to chazaka, meaning three different, we'll call it, regions in Eretz Yisrael for chazaka purposes. Now we'll see what this means in just a moment. What are the three areas? Yehuda, Eva Hayarden, and Galil. So Yehuda, which Abosai essentially means the center of the country, right? The Yarden, the Jordan River area, and Galil, and the north. These are the three areas of Bosai. So says the Gemara, Haya be Yehuda, vehechzik begadol. So Bosai, let's say the owner of the land, so let's say I'm the owner of the land, but I'm not presently in the same region as my property. So let's say again, my property is in the Galil, and I am in Yehuda. Someone's living in my land in the Galil. Good morning, Mr. Schoenfeld. Someone's living in my land in the Galil. Or what happens? Begalil, vehechzik be Yehuda. Or I'm in the Galil, right? But ultimately, my land is in Yehuda, and someone's living on my land. Or, so in all of these cases, Rabbi Osai, Eina chazaka at shiehe imo b'medina achos. So Rabbi Osai, the act of someone else living in my land is not a bona fide chazaka unless what? Unless I, the owner, am in the same region. Rabbi Osai is another way of saying that what the Mishnah seems to be saying is that really, the only ability for an owner to lodge a proper the only time you have a real chazaka on land is if the supposed owner was in the same region and did not lodge a macha, did not object to your residence. Because again, if I know Reuven used to own this piece of land, and he's down the block from me, and I've been living here for 3 years, and he never said boo, he never said anything to me, then that indicates that what? That I am the true owner. But I will say, if I'm living on land, and Reuven, who we knew to be the former owner, or the owner at one point in time, is just in a totally different region, so the fact that there was no macha does not in any way solidify my ownership. So ownership of chazaka is only meaningful if the last known owner is in the same region at the same time over the years of my chazaka. So take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. The Rashbam says, Haya, it's about 6 lines into the wide lines of the Rashbam. Haya bala karka bi Yehuda, ve'echsik bi Galil, she'a karka bi Galil, ve'echsik ba'adam shalosh onem b'lo machal. So let's say, just taking one case. Let's say the owner of the land was in Yehuda. The land itself, of course, is in the Galil. So I'm the owner of the land. I'm in Yehuda. Someone's living in my land in the Galil for 3 years, below Macha, and I did not object to his residence on my land. Eino chazaka. So we'll say, ultimately, we're going to see that what? That this does not constitute a bona fide chazaka. Now, again, I'm going to leave the rest of the Rashbam, because we're going to see it in the Gemara. Back to the Mishnah. Amr of Yehuda, lo amru shaloshanim el elo, says Rabbi Huda, and Abba says, we're going to see Rabbi Huda fundamentally disagrees with the notion of chazaka as we have understood it until now. Rabbi Huda says, why is it that you need 3 years of chazaka? Why 3 years of chazaka? So he says, 3 years, it allows us for the following. Lo amru shalosh shanim ela, kedei shehe ba'aspamya, v'yachzik shana, yelchu v'yodi'u shana, So we'll say, the reason we need 3 years is because, let's say the owner of the land is in Aspamya, some faraway land. Someone else is living on his land. So what that does is the following. That gives the person who's living on the land a year to live there. It then gives us a year to get to the last known owner to tell him, by the way, someone's living on your land. And in the event that he objects, it gives us the ability, it gives him the ability to get a year, to spend the year getting back and lodging his objection. Rabosai, now we're going to define what Rabbi Huda actually means, but for our purposes, Rabosai means the following. Take a look at the Rashbam. Am Rabbi Huda lo amru shaloshanim lach lokba. Rabbi Huda is arguing on the Tanakhama as we're going to learn. Velomar, the inan chalukos lechazaka, the haya begala behechzik biyehuda havi chazaka, v'afi lo haya baspam yeshu rachok malek shonim eretz yisrael, behechzik beretz yisrael, havi chazaka, shari lekach ha'erichu shnei chazaka zman merubes shal shaloshanim, kedei shir, shim haya baspam yeshu v'im yachzik ze bakarka shaloshana, ubesok shonim rishonu yatzakol, yelchu b'shonu shniya v'yodiyu lebalakarka, ubeshonu shlishas yavo v'yimcha. So we're going to see Rabbi Huda holds that real chazaka does not actually require 3 years. Number two, he does not agree with the Tanakhama's distinction among the regions in Eretz Yisrael, but feels that if the owner is in the Galil and someone else is living in Yehuda, the land is in Yehuda, that the person who's living on the land in Yehuda could go and establish chazaka even if the owner is in the Galil. So, and Rabbi Huda only holds that the reason you need 3 years is why Rabbi Osai is ultimately, again, in the event that the owner is far away and we require required the time to tell him about what's happening with his property. So what does Rabbi Yehuda hold in the essence of Chazak? Rabbi says, skip a line, go right to the end of the period. He says, "V'tam Rabbi Yehuda lo mishum detlas shani mizdar inish b'shtari." So what says, we're going to see, you see, what we always felt, that 3 years established Chazakah. Why? For the first 3 years, a person is careful to keep their shtar. After 3 years, a person's established residency, and they no longer are makbid with the shtar. Therefore, again, residency is enough to establish ownership. Rabbi Yehuda rejects that idea. Rabbi, he says, "Elokid beforeish kedei shiyeh v'taimid dechazaka lididei delo shavik inish tachlua la'ari b'lo reshusei va'afilu sha'achas v'shasek elekach erichu shaloshan shvayam ar rochok." Most of listen to this. Rabbi Yehuda holds, we'll say that if I'm living on land and the former owner is there, is in proximity, and the former owner doesn't say anything immediately, then what? I establish chazaka right there and there. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you can establish chazaka in an hour. Which we'll say, there's a logic to that, because Rabbi Yehuda presupposes if somebody is living on your land, people don't say, "Oh, you know what? I'll just get to that later." Right? We'll say, remember, now again, obviously we think about this from a residential perspective, that it's a pure violation of one's personal space. Even in agricultural sense, Rabbi Yehuda says, if you see someone else on your land and you did not sell that person the land, did not share crop, you didn't rent it to them, you are going to get them off that land immediately. And if you don't get that off them land, their land, then what? That indicates that what? That they are the owners. Rabbi Yehuda holds chazaka could be established immediately. Why the 3 years? The 3 year mechanism is just there. In situations where the owner is far, far away, it gives us the opportunity to inform the owner and gives the owner the opportunity to lodge a macha in the event that he has not sold the property to this individual. So we'll say, so that's coming out of this Mishnah something rivetingly exciting, which is a fundamental machlokes in the mechanics of chazaka. So what's really happening over here is that the Tanakhama holds that chazaka requires 3 years. Chazaka requires 3 years. Rabbi Yehuda holds, no. Real chazaka requires how long, Rabbi Osai? How long, Kodesh Rabbi Yehuda? You know, he says, don't get carried away. Calm down. Right? But at least, you know, sha'achas, a minute, right? The point over here is it requires a very small amount of time. Now you're going to say, how much? The truth is all kidding aside. We will have to figure out the Rashbam uses the notion of sha'achas. So whatever it means, the point that Rabbi Yehuda holds is that as soon as the quote-unquote former owner has an awareness and does not lodge a complaint, that solidifies the owner ownership of the person who is currently residing on the land. So we'll say it's a fundamental machlokis in the mechanics of chazaka. And even Rabbi Huda, who holds that, yes, Tanakama, I'll agree with you, that technically you need 3 years, that's only in specific cases where the owner is in a far flung place. It's gonna take us time to get there and take us time to get back. Says the Gemara. Micah Sarva Tanakama, we'll say, so the Gemara has a very simple question. The Tanakhama begins with a discussion about the three regions of Eretz Yisrael, and indicates to us that what? That the only time that Chazakah is really established is if the owner is in the same region as his land. But if the owner is not in the same region as his land, then the fact that the person is living there and no macha has been lodged is not indicative of ownership. Does not establish ownership. Says the Gemara, Ma'akas Sarva Tanakhama. So what does the Tanakhama hold? So we'll say, if you hold, remember, we'll say, we kind of dabbled in this a little bit a few days ago. What's the nature of a macha? When the owner, when we say that the owner has to object to someone else living on his land, meaning he has to solidify his ownership by making a statement of ownership, does that statement have to be made in the presence of the person who is currently living on the land? That's called a macha b'fanov. Or can the objection go ahead and be lodged even not in the presence of the person who's living there? Now, both say, you'll see to yourself, well, what's the logic of making the objection, of lodging the objection, if it's not in the presence of the person who's living there? Now, both say, remember again, remember the Lashon, we'll see it again today. Chavra, chavra islay, v'chavra dechavra islay. The assumption is people talk, so if I'm the owner and I lodge my objection, I'm confident that objection is going to reach the ears of the person who's currently living there. So ask the Gemara, so what does the Tanakhama hold? If the Tanakhama holds that even an objection that is raised, not in the presence of the person who is currently living on the field, is a bona fide objection, if that's the case, then I feel Yehuda v'Galil Nami. The Rabbah said it shouldn't matter if the owner is in the same region as his land, as long as he goes ahead and he puts forward the macha, even if he's in a different region, then that should be enough. And if you hold your vote, that in order for the objection to be a valid one, it has to be made in the presence of the person who is currently living on the land, then even if the owner and the person living in the land are what, in the same region, if they're not in the presence of one another, the macha is not good. To which the Gemara says, Amrav Abba Bar Mama, Amrav Li Amrav, Li Olam Kasara Macha Shalom Bafanov Havya Macha. Well, so in reality, we hold that an objection that is lodged not in the presence of the person who is currently living on the land is a proper macha. Both says, this is a very important idea. Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. It's about 8 lines up in the Rashbam from the bottom. So both say, in reality, the Tanakhama holds that the owner has the right to lodge an objection to someone else living in his land, even if it's what? Even if it's not in the presence of that person who's currently living on the land. So it says, and again, both say, the chap over that is what? The chap over that is that as long as the owner lodges his objection, and we're going to say it has to be done in front of Aiden, so even if the person living on the land says that what? I never heard it. Halachas, we don't care. You heard it. We're confident that some way, somehow, that word got to you. So the owner of the land has the right to lodge an objection, even not in the presence of the person currently living on the land. Look at the Rashbam. So I said, that's why the Mishnah says that ultimately, again, they have to be together in the same region. I'll just tell you the difficult part about the Rashbam. It's the great part about the Rashbam, but it's the difficult part. The Rashbam, as you've seen, is a much more comprehensive mefarish than the Zayda, than Rashi. So, but what's difficult about the Rashbam is like eager to give you the punchline even before you've read it in the Gemara. So we have to go, it's great for learning the sugya because he gives you such a comprehensive, I want to become a big fan. I want to go on record as saying I'm a big fan. But again, it's hard because, okay, so back up to the Gemara for just a moment. Says the Gemara, so now here's the problem. If you hold, so the problem that this raises is now the Gemara suggesting is Tanakama holds Macha Shlo Bafanav Havi Macha, that the owner of the land has the right to lodge his objection to someone else's residence on the land, even what? Even not in the presence of the person living on the land. But one second, if that's the case, then what? Why does the Tanakhama say that they have to be in the same region? If that's the case, even if the owner is in Yehuda and the property is in Galil, he should be able to lodge the macha. Yet the Mishnah says you can't. To which the Gemara says, Mishnah say no, b'shas chirum shanu. Oh, we'll say the Mishnah is talking about a case of a shas chirum. We'll say shas chirum literally means, like, chirum means emergency, right? But what this means is, like, in a warring state. Where, and now, look at the Rashbam. Now the Rashbam says, second line in that Rashbam, the Olam Kasavar, he says, Mas nisin b'shas chirum tigrus yesh ben Yehuda v'galil. The Mishnah is talking about, we'll say, a case where there's, like, a warlike state between Yehuda and Galil. Ve'in shayaros mitsuyos mizulazu. And therefore, I will say, what? There's no transportation. There are no caravans running between the different regions. Vim yimcha lo yava hadavar li oznav shal machzik, sheizar bishtaro, ve'elchach lo havi macha. V'cheben lo havi macha oso shal ma'ar macha, chazkaso shal zeh nami lo havi chazaka. So listen to this. So the Gemara suggests the following. Under normal circumstances, we say, macha shlo befonav es havi macha. That if the owner of the property lodges a complaint, even not in the presence of the person living on the land, that is a proper macha. Rabbo say, what does that presuppose? That presupposes that when I make a statement, even in a different region, what's going to happen? Word travels. Why does word travel? Because people travel from Yehuda to Galil to this to that. That's people. People travel. I will say, but the Gemara says over here, when we know that there is no travel. Now, when is there no travel? When there are warlike conditions. I will say, and this is talking about a situation of Eretz Yisrael under Gentile rulers, right? But when there's a shaschirum, when there's what we call warlike situation where people aren't traveling, then what? Then I can't rely on my objection traveling either. In other words, My word travels with the shayaros. My word travels with the caravans. When the caravans have stopped, right, when the trains are no longer running, I cannot count on my word being conveyed either. So it's a very interesting idea. Therefore, the Gemara says that as much as we're saying macha shalav b'fanav havi macha, that you don't have to make, the owner does not have to lodge his objection to the residence of the squatter. In the presence of the squatter, rather, again, he can make it anywhere, but that's only true if he's confident that his word is going to travel. But if there's a shaschin of a state of emergency, if there's no travel, then again, the macha is not going to be good. And I will say, now the ramifications of the macha not being good is what? Is that if the macha is not good, then the person living on the land doesn't have the ability to establish chazakah. In other words, chazakah is only established where there's the ability to lodge a macha. But if there's no ability for macha, then there's no ability for chazakah, which makes sense. To which the Gemara says, "Umashna Yehuda v'Galil dinakid." So why does the Mishnah both say if that's the case, and why does the Mishnah bring up the whole discussion of Yehuda v'Galil? To which the Gemara says, "Hakamash Malon," to teach us that what Amad Beis to stam Yehuda v'Galil kishas chirum damar. This is actually a very interesting statement to teach us that generally, again, just the state of affairs, at least in the times of the Gemara, is that Yehuda v'Galil, Rashbam even points out, b'shas shalom, ultimately is like a shas chirum. In other words, there was really no transportation between Yehuda and Galil, which I will say is quite interesting. There was just no shayaros. People were not traveling between Yehuda and the Galil. So because people did not travel between Yehuda and Galil, therefore a macha lodged in one of these regions would not reach the other region, and therefore would not be a bona fide macha. Which therefore means that if Lemaisa, again, I, the owner of the property, is in Yehuda, but my property is in the Galil, and somebody was living on the property for 3 years, they would not be able to establish a chazaka based on their 3-year residency and my lack of macha. Because my lack of macha, I will say, was not because that I'm ceding an ownership interest. My lack of macha is because I know the macha would be meaningless, because there'd be no way for my macha to travel from the Galil to Yehuda. Fine. Says Yehuda. So we'll say, well, again, the take-home message, again, we'll see a couple of other halachas, but the take-home message right now is that, remember, first of all, the Gemara seems to be saying that macha shalav b'fanav havi macha, that an objection need not be raised or need not be made in the presence of the squatter. That's lesson number one. And lesson number two, which is very important for the mechanics of chazakah, that chazakah is only meaningful where there was the possibility for macha. But if, again, there's no possibility for macha, then the chazakah itself is meaningless as well. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Ein machzikim minechsei borech. Rav says another very interesting halacha. You cannot make a chazakah, Rav Osai, in the property of a boreach. Now, what does this mean? But this is about somebody who has to run away. Now we'll discuss why they're running away. Right? Somebody has to get out of town. So we'll say the fact that they have to get out of town and I decide to live on their land for 3 years, that's not a chazaka. Look at the Rashbam. Im machzik ben nechse boreach. Kilomar, im hechzik in a chazaka. The first shows that the kasar macha shal b'fon av lo havi chaza. Chaz lo havi macha. The kevin lo yocha linchos gam ze lo yocha lahachzik. So we'll say what this sounds like over here is if somebody's running away, therefore, they have the inability to lodge a macha. So because they can't lodge a macha, therefore what? My chazaka is meaningless as well. Ki amri sakamei de Shmuel. So when I said this over before Shmuel, Amar li v'chi limchos b'fanat utzarech. So Shmuel says, I don't understand why. Meaning, why can't the boreach make a macha? I got he's on the run. But let him go. Remember, what did we just get finished saying? We just got finished saying that macha shalo b'fanav havi macha, that you need not lodge the objection in front of the person who is currently residing on the land. So let the boreach go ahead and make the chazak, make the macha wherever he is, to which the immersive of a Rav my kamashalon. So what is Rav coming to teach us? Macha shalo b'fanav lo havi macha. So is Rav coming to teach us, Rabbi Osai? Is Rav coming to argue on Shmuel and say that no, in order for a macha to be valid, it must be made in the presence of the squatter? But v'ha'amar Rav, Rav already said, macha shalo b'fanav havi macha. But Osai, it's not true. Rav himself said that an objection, macha shalo b'fanav, an objection That is made shalobafanob, that ultimately again is made not in the presence of the squatter, is a valid objection. To which the IRS is Rav, Taima Ditana Didan Kamefarish, Valei Lo Sfirale. To which the Gemara answers, you're right. Rav Rabosai is espousing the opinion of our Tanakamo. Our Tanakamo holds that a macha is only meaningful if it's befanav, if it's in the presence of the squatter. But Rav does not hold that way. The Gedan will say there's an alternate version of this discussion. This is an alternate version of the previous discussion. What's the alternate version? In this case, Rav says over here that one can make a chazaka on the property of someone who is running away. Okay, so it says the Gemara, can we say Kamei the Shmuel Amar Lipshita? When I said this over in front of Shmuel, Shmuel said, "Nu it's Pashit." Shmuel says, of course you can make a chazaka on the property of a boreach. Why, Rabbi Osai? Why? Because the Maase at the end of the day, Machah Shelo Befanav Havya Machah. Right? They will say, obviously, again, I could go ahead if I'm the owner of the land. I'm the boreach. I need to get out of Dodge. Right? I need to get out of town. But at the end of the day, I could still go ahead and say, by the way, I'm the owner of the land. If someone else, that, you know, that guy Reuven is trying to live there now, I am still the owner. And the fact that I'm lodging that machah, not in the presence of the squatter, in no way erodes the power of that machah. So Shmuel says, it's parshat. Techim limchos befanav utzarach. They have to make a machah in the presence of the squatter. Rav Mike Kamashas, where is Rav coming to teach us? Machah shal befanav havi machah. Is Rav just coming to teach us, Rabbi Osai, that a machah not made in the presence of the squatter is a proper machah. Va'amra Rav chadazimna. Rav already taught us this. Elaha kamashalan. Rather, what is Rav teaching us? Also, listen to this. The novelty of Rav's ruling is the following. Elaha kamashalan. Da'afilu micha bifnei beis she'in yecholin lomar lo havya machah. Bosei, the novelty of Rav's ruling, Bosei, is that even if the owner, Bosei, we're going to discuss now that in order for a machah to be valid, so what we've established is a machah shlo b'fanav havi machah, that the owner could lodge a protest, or I should say, the owner could go ahead and make a definitive claim of his own ownership over the land, even not in the presence of the squatter. But who does it have to be done in front of, Bosei? You have to do it in front of Eitim. But what's the chiddush? What's the novelty of Rav's statement? Even if I make the machah in front of two witnesses who lack the ability to convey this machah to the squatter, what would be an example of Edim who lack the ability to convey the machah to the squatter? Look at the Rashbam, last short line in the Rashbam. Afilu micha b'fnei beis yichol nolomer lo kigon chigrin. Let's say the Edim in front of whom I lodge the machah are crippled. They're handicapped. They can't go anywhere. Or for that matter, they're about to get onto a boat, l'medina sayam. So they're going to be far away. So meaning, I know that for a fact, that what? They're not going back to convey that information. Rav says, it's still a machah. To which the Gemara says, havi machah, the amar Rav anan, l'didimi farsh le'minei dimar Shmuel, because I learned from our Shmuel, Micha b'fnei shnei b'nei adam she'cholim lomar lo, havi machah. They will say, if the owner goes out and lodges his machah in front of two witnesses who have the ability to convey this machah to who? To the squatter, then that's a proper machah. However, b'fnei shnei b'nei adam she'en yecholim lomar lo, lo havi machah. They will say, if at the end of the day, the owner lodges his complaint, his objection, in front of two witnesses who do not have the ability to go ahead and convey the machah to the person currently residing on the land, for whatever, they're crippled, or again, they're going overseas, then what? Lo havi machah. And Rav, Shabbos says, but what does Rav hold? Rav holds that as long as you lodge that machah in front of two witnesses, then what? You're good. The witnesses are crippled and they can't travel anywhere, or the witnesses are getting onto a boat and going to some far-flung place, it's still good. Why? Chavra islay, the chavra de chavra islay. So we'll say, because Rav holds, at the end of the day, your friend has a friend, and the friend of your friend has a friend. As we'll say, Rav says, at the end of the day, as long as you told it to two people, you can be confident that what? So we'll say, you know, the best way to ensure that word gets out is how? Make sure to tell someone, I need to tell you something very important, but please don't share it with anyone. Right? As long as you give that introduction, right, you can be pretty sure. You can be pretty sure that it's going to get out to whoever it needs to get out to. But all kidding aside, Rav says that Lamaisa, people talk. So even if you tell to the witnesses who themselves can't travel, or witnesses again who at the end of the day are going to have to go ahead and leave and go to somewhere else. Lamaise, at the end of it, you could be sure that word is going to get. So what's the halacha? Vehilchasah. So I'll say we finish up the sugya. Amar Rabbi Rava says, Hilchasah, ein machzikin benichsei bareach, umachosh lo befanav havi machav. So I'll say, listen to this. Rava seems to make two contradictory statements. Let's start with the second one first. Machosh lo befanav havi machav. So we'll say, halacha lamaisa, Rava paskins that I, the owner of the land, have the ability to lodge a formal complaint / declaration of ownership about my land, right? Even what? Even not in the presence of the person who is residing on that land. Okay? So, right, so both said, and that, by the way, that is indeed halacha l'maisa. The macha need not be done in the presence of the person who is currently living on the land, even if I'm far away. That's halacha number one. Halacha number two, Rabbi Osei, is that what? You cannot make a proper chazaka on the property of a borech. So remember again, a borech is a person who's running away. I'm now residing on that land. My living on that land for 3 years does not establish the chazaka, which Rabbi Osei seems to mean that. So says the Gemara, I don't understand. Tarti, that's an inherent contradiction. Otherwise, why Rabbi Osei? Because if you hold that macha shel b'fanav havi macha, that the owner of the land could go ahead and what? Could go ahead and lodge a complaint, and lodge a declaration of ownership. And by definition, declaration of ownership / what was what I was looking for? Declaration of ownership / objection to residency, we'll call it. Right? So I'm declaring my ownership and saying, Reuven, who's living on there, you're not allowed to be there, it's my property. So if that's true, and I don't have to do that in the presence of what? Of the squatter, then Rabosai, even a boreach should be able to do that as well. In other words, Rabosai, the Rava says, Machosho b'fanav havi macha, but you can't make a chazaka on the property of a boreach. But why not? If machosh lo b'fanav havi macha, then what, Rabosai? Then what? Then even the boreach, so while he's running away, should what? Lodge a machal, let him lodge a complaint, let him lodge an objection, his declaration of ownership, and let him prevent the squatter from establishing chazaka. Why do we say, the fact that we say that you can't make a chazaka on the property of a boreach indicates to us what? That the boreach can't make a machal. But why can't the boreach make a machal? We just said machal shol b'fanav havi machal. Oh, to which thing was lo kasha. It depends what type of boreach. Watch this. Kan boreach machmas mamon, kan boreach machmas mardin. So sometimes people run away because they can't pay their debts. Now the idea is, if I can't pay my debts, all I need to do is what Rabbi Osei? I just need to get out of town. But I know my creditors aren't running after me. Why? Because it's not worth their while. I don't have money. So I need to get out of town to kind of keep the heat off. But Lamaisa, they're not running after me because at the end of the day, I don't have any money. So they're not going to run after me. Therefore, what? I have no problem with disclosing my location. And therefore, I have the ability to lodge a macha even from a distance. Rabbi Osei, if somebody's wanted on capital charges, right, machmas mardin, right? I'm being accused chas v'shalom of murder. I'm wanted on capital charges. Then what? I have a vested interest in keeping my whereabouts absolutely secret. Therefore, I cannot lodge a macha. Because if I go out and lodge a macha, then what, Rabbi Osei? People know where I am. If people know where I am, then I could get in big trouble. So the Gemara says, everything depends on why you're running. Right? Everything depends on why you're running. If you're running because of money, there's an expectation that you're still going to lodge a macha, because macha shall be fun of havi macha, and you don't really care if people know your whereabouts. If on the other hand, you're wanted on capital offenses, then what? Then you are not going to be able to lodge a macha because you need to keep your location secret. Therefore, I will say, in a case like that, where I have to keep my location secret, therefore, that's where Rava will say that making a chazaka on the nichasim of a boreach is not going to be a chazaka, because in that case, again, we assume that the boreach doesn't have the ability to lodge a proper macha. Therefore, someone's residence on the boreach's property is not going to establish chazaka. But I will say, bottom line, for our purposes, halacha lemaisa, we will say that a macha shelo b'fanav havi macha. The Rabbi Osei, in order for the owner to lodge his objection to the residency of the squatter, that need not be done in the presence of the squatter himself, but it could even be done at a distance, it could even be done at a different region, because we rely on Rav's approach of Chavra, Chavra Islay, the Chavra Islay, your friend has a friend, the friend of your friend has a friend, and that statement ultimately, again, will reach the ears of the person who is currently living on the land. All right, so we'll stop up here.